listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
Giants and Lions game. More of the slant. Jets out, 66 yards.
That is Mike Tirico, my favorite broadcaster, making my favorite call of the year on the Jarvis Landry 66-yard touchdown pass from Matt Moore to blow out the Jets 34-13 at the Meadowlands. And we are back here again with you guys with another episode of the Finalysis Podcast. Travis Wingfield, your host, and my co-host, resident defensive coordinator Kevin Dern, here to discuss that blowout victory. Kevin, how's it going, man?
It's going well, feeling a lot better. I was a little under the weather this past weekend, but the victory over the Jets and the season sweep kind of got me back to 100% good health, so I'm doing well.
The win over the Jets is going to do that, especially when it's two in the same season, because we haven't done that since 2019, since the infamous, I don't know if you want to call it Teddy Ginn year, but the Ted Ginn Jet series, if you will, with the two kickoffs for touchdowns and then the beat, or the Darrelle Revis burn job he did to win the Monday Nighter in that season. So first time in 7 years we swept the Jets, going for the first time since 2008 on the Buffalo Bills. So the Dolphins trending in the right direction, 9-5, heading in towards the playoffs. And Kevin, this game was on a Saturday night, so a little bit different than we're used to in terms of how we watch it. You know, I'm on the West Coast out here at 10 o'clock in the morning, watching on Sundays most of the time. But this game's at 5:30 for me on a Saturday night, you know, right in the thick of the holiday season with the friends and family coming out and everything. So it was a pretty good night for me watching that game and watching them beat the crap out of our biggest rival. But I heard your night was not quite as good as mine.
Yeah, I may have been one of the few people that was actually shitting more than Bryce Petty on Saturday night. Had a little food poisoning from an office lunch we went to last week. I think out of 12 people who went, 10 of us were sick over the weekend, and I was one of them. So I think at one point it was coming out of both ends simultaneously, so not a good night.
If you follow us for the whole 14 or 15 episodes we've had so far, you know that we're South Park fans with the whole Member Berries sound drop and segment we do. There's also a South Park episode way back when, Kevin, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, where Randy Marsh has an upset stomach from a roller coaster ride, and he's got an upset stomach from eating some bad food, and he's got a bloody nose, so he's doing all three at the same time. So I'm picturing you over a trash can cheering the Dolphins on while you're you know, coming out the back end and the front end at the same time. So
yeah, I was pretty much like Cartman in the World of Warcraft episode for 1 minute. So.
Do you have your mom bring you Hot Pockets too?
Nah, I don't live with her anymore, so I'm all good.
There you go. Fair enough. All right. So tonight I'm actually taking a drink of a cider, and I hope that doesn't make you guys think less of me, because I've been on a little bit of a cider kick lately, and it's a Northwest Spire Mountain Brewing, or whatever the hell you call it out here in the Northwest. So drinking that, and Saturday I had a few drinks as well. I told Kevin before I came on the air that it was actually Saturday was my favorite day of 2016. I mean, you mix in the idea of beating the Jets and sweeping the Jets and a blowout victory on primetime television on a Saturday night where we get a party and kind of, you know, and do it big, opposed to a Sunday where you're stuck to have to go to work the next day. I had some friends over for the game with my brother, who I don't get to watch a lot of games with. My girlfriend was there. My sister-in-law started drinking around 2 o'clock, had an ugly sweater party that I went to after the game. So I was already on one from the celebration of the game, went over there and won the ugly sweater contest. I'll have it on Facebook if any of you guys are on my Facebook. And then, just proceeded to get pretty much housed the entire night and was just bragging to everybody at the party about how the Dolphins are back and they're going to make a run with Adam Gase and possibly even Matt Moore, and you know, going to be winning Super Bowls for years and years to come. And I'm sure by the time I left that party, everyone was excited that I was leaving because I was talking so much about the Dolphins. So that's why I have a podcast talking about the Dolphins, and we're here talking about the Jets game, because I tend to ramble on a little bit when it comes to my friends and they don't want to hear it. But for me, blacked out drunk, my perspective was a phenomenal night. So Kevin and I had very different Saturday nights, but what was the one common theme was celebrating a Dolphins win over the Jets. That's all I really got to say about that. I mean, it was a really fun time.
I'm glad you celebrated enough for both of us, because I was barely able to get off the couch at the end of the game.
That's a pretty rough week way to spend a weekend. I've been there a few times with myself, so sorry about that. But hopefully you're feeling better for Christmas Eve and a big one with the Bills. We will get to that one, that game against the Bills. We'll have the review for you guys coming up, also talking about the playoffs and and where the Dolphins sit and how they can get back to the playoffs, as well as some Ryan Tannehill news. Kevin and I kind of went back and forth via text earlier today about that, so we'll get you guys all caught up on all that news. But first, Kevin, do you got anything else you want to add before we get into this review?
Nothing right now. I think I've embarrassed myself enough already in this episode. So
you can't embarrass yourself. Sorry, go ahead.
So we might as well get to it.
Yeah, you can't embarrass yourself any more than the Jets did on Saturday night. So why don't you kick us off with a defensive review?
Yeah, so obviously 34-13 blowout win. Jets scored early on the first drive, and you know Miami pretty much coasted. You know, once they got the lead in the second quarter, just the notes I wrote down. I thought they did a really nice job. You know, looking at Petty and Fitzpatrick's numbers combined, they were 25 of 46 for 266 yards. They had three interceptions. Cameron Wake also forced that fumble that was recovered by Sue. And they had three sacks on the night. Wake, obviously, with the strip sack. Neville Hewitt and Issa Abdul-Kaddous. Pretty much just a thrashing after that first drive. And even that first drive, they had them in a third and long and gave up a bad first down, which kind of leads me to my first note. You know, if you look at Jelani Jenkins in that game, he just didn't look right. Like, I watched a little bit of the game on Sunday, and then I watched it again today, and you know, he said after the game, and Gase kind of said this in his media availability, that Jenkins couldn't slow down, he couldn't decelerate, his knee was bothering him. And if you watch those two dump offs to Bilal Powell on that first drive, he's like way too far deep in his drops into the zone that he was playing, and basically lets Powell get open. Gase basically said today that it sounds like he's a long shot to play against Buffalo. I don't know whether that'll help us or hurt us, but I think that was, you know, relevant just because it basically gave the Jets a free drive because Jenkins couldn't get himself in position. On a more positive note, Ndamukong Suh was just basically a man amongst men. The big note I wrote down was he made Brian Winters his bitch all night. I mean, he was just locking out, extending, getting pass rush, making plays against the run. Cameron Wake was outstanding off the edge. He had a sack, a forced fumble, and his first career interception.
Kevin, it seems like every single week you're telling me about Ndamukong Suh making somebody his bitch. I mean, this guy's playing at a level that's I don't even know if it's been matched by him at Detroit, you know, a couple of years back. Is this Ndamukong Suh's best year of his career for you?
If not, it's very close. Really the only year I can think of that he was about this good or better was 2014 when they had that ridiculous defense in Detroit. But I mean, if he's not on the first team All-Pro team, I think something's wrong. He's playing great. And then I think, you know, another positive we had that night was, you know, Byron Maxwell got hurt. I think it was eight plays into the game and went out. And Xavien Howard came back in for the first time since, I believe, the Titans game way back in September. And he played really well, I thought. You know, Travis, what were your thoughts, you know, about him, his play on Saturday night?
I was there on opening day. I've mentioned this a million times in Seattle, and the biggest thing that stuck out for me in that game was his tackling ability and how physical he was. And I think you're seeing that kind of transition into his coverage ability on Saturday night. I mean, the way he was pressing and getting into trail technique is kind of what I thought this defense would be doing all along from the beginning of the season, and I was very encouraged by it because, you know, they said that he had some problems with some, you know, deep coverage and getting like guys getting on top of him in college, but that was not even close to the case. On Saturday, he had a good press, a good jam, and was, you know, in the receiver's hip pocket and played physical all night. Man, I love it. I think he's got a bright future for us.
Yeah, that was one of the things I noticed is once Maxwell went out, and, you know, if you know Maxwell's history, he's from that Seattle scheme, that cover three stuff. Once he went out, I thought Miami played a lot more press man, and they basically let Lippitt and Howard, you know, go at receivers at the line. You know, even if they got behind, you know, Howard showed some nice recovery speed. And then Tony Lippitt, who's 6'3", you know, that interception that he made, the first one on that fade down the sideline against Anderson, you know, I almost wonder if he baited Bryce Petty into it because it looked like he gave Anderson a step. And he's just so damn long, he was able to come down with that pick. I thought both of those guys played really well. I did note that Howard had one missed tackle on a crossing route, but other than that, I thought he was great. And, you know, if you could guarantee me his knee was 100% healthy going into this offseason and would be next year, I would almost consider getting out of Byron Maxwell's contract if you can, just because those two guys, you know, Howard, I thought was their best corner early in the year, you know, when he was starting before he got hurt. And then Lippitt, I think, has basically developed himself into a starter at this point. One of the other things I thought was creative in the game was Vance Joseph, at least the last couple weeks, has shown a really good knack for bringing some zone blitz pressure. And even if he's got his guys playing in a cover four look on the outside where it looks like, man, he still did some creative stuff. You know, if you watch the Cameron Wake interception, Jelani Jenkins kind of creeps up towards the line of scrimmage and the defensive line shifts that way. So Jenkins basically gets a one-on-one rush against the back and Wake drops off into coverage and gets the pick. They did it again when Neville Hewitt got a sack. He kind of creeped up. And I think they dropped Andre Branch that time, and it really fooled Ben Ajelana, and Neville Hewitt came in untouched and got a sack. So, you know, I thought that was, you know, really good on the part of Vance Joseph and just trying to throw a lot of stuff at Bryce Petty, keeping him uncomfortable. And, you know, they got timely turnovers. You know, they're tied for second in the NFL with 16 interceptions. They've got 9 fumble recoveries. They have 2 defensive touchdowns. Walt Akins had that huge play with the block punt, the scoop and score. You know, just it's kind of what we expected at the beginning of the season. You know, they're middle of the pack in points allowed, 11th against the pass. They've kind of been hovering in that 8 to 12 range all year. The run defense was kind of the same thing. You know, they had some tackling issues, and Gase touched on that. You know, Alonzo and Jenkins both have their hands in casts. They both missed at least 2 tackles by my count. I had Pacinger, Michael Thomas, and Xavier Howard all with missed tackles as well. So I think if they clean some of that stuff up, you know, this defense can really start clicking. Obviously, the linebacker stuff and some DN depth will be addressed this offseason, but they really impressed me with how they played on Saturday.
Got a couple of questions for you off that, Kevin. First one is you mentioned, you know, Vance Joseph obviously has a big hand, this defense, and how they're performing right now. It seems like more times than not, the first drive or maybe the first couple of drives of the game for the defense, they're getting scored on and oftentimes touchdowns, and as was the case on Saturday against the Jets. You know, that drive, you mentioned Jelani Jenkins' bad play. I kind of crapped all over him on Twitter and on my my blog portion of welcometoperfectfield.com. You know, the injury or not, he's just not getting it done. But, you know, those dump-off passes to Bilal Powell that they were converting third and long on, and then the Robbie Anderson play where Bakari Rambo's out of position, is he slow to – is his script bad, or his ability to, you know, come out with a solid game plan against the 15-play script of the opposition bad, and then he makes his adjustments? Or what do you think is causing that?
I don't know if his game plan is so much as bad as maybe he's a little over-aggressive. You know, they came with a pretty big pass rush early in that game, and the Jets kind of burned him on some screens and some little dump-off passes. And then I think he kind of reverted back to the zone blitz stuff, so you always had someone, you know, kind of back there waiting on those dump-offs. They really weren't a factor, you know, the rest of the game until, you know, Miami played prevent in the fourth quarter. You know, they had the Jets in what, I think, a 3rd-and-12 or 3rd-and-13, and, you know, got burned there by some missed tackles.
Yeah.
I think he's been fine. Really, the 3 games I would say where, you know, the defense has just been downright awful would be New England back in week 1. They were awful for a quarter and a half until he started to figure it out. I think that was just a bad game plan. Baltimore, obviously, a couple weeks ago was a bad game plan. And then Tennessee, I don't know if that was so much of a bad game plan as much as just Tennessee just bludgeoned us that day. But, I mean, look at some of the offenses we've managed to slow down, some of the backs that we've held in check. I think he's pretty right on the money, maybe either over-aggressive or not aggressive enough on the first drive. But usually, you know, by the second possession of the opponent, he's kind of dialed into it, you know, other than the Baltimore and the New England games, which got away from us.
Yeah, it's really nice to see those kind of adjustments made, because I think the offense kind of suffers from some of that similar, you know, downfalls where they're starting off slow. And it happened on Saturday with those first couple of drives. I mean, I was quick to go to Twitter and say, this is what you guys wanted when you wanted Matt Moore back in week 5. But luckily, he made me eat my words and played a hell of a game after that. But coaching on this team is really what has been the big turnaround, I think. I mean, you have so many guys that have developed under Adam Gase and his staff just in their first or second years in the league. You and I talked about the draft class that you're playing, you know, paying huge dividends already. But you look at the development of guys like Tony Lippitt and Bobby McCain, Jordan Phillips, even Kenny Stills. This is only Kenny Stills' 4th year in the league and his 2nd year on the team. guys that are just having career years already at such a young age and really playing at a high level and contributing to this team and to the 9 wins and everything. So really glad to see that. Speaking of Lippitt and McCain, and you mentioned Howard and Maxwell earlier, you know, I think I'm with you if you can guarantee Xavien Howard playing at a high level with that knee being healthy, because Maxwell eats up a lot of money, and we have some guys that are going to be due for some big contracts pretty soon. You know, Kenny Stills is up this offseason, and I wrote an article on the Wright Travis Wright blog portion of the WelcomeToPerfectVille.com website talking about Kenny Stills and kind of how he runs a lot of clear-out routes, and we'll get to that later. But Kenny Stills has been so valuable to this offense, and I would rather allocate that money, you know, towards Kenny Stills and then Jarvis Landry, who's going to be due up in 2 years, and then Devontae Parker due up in 3 years, and then also kind of getting the offensive line fixed. So I love what Maxwell's done, but I think you may be onto something in terms of if Xavien Howard plays out the string here really well and even maybe well into a playoff game, that you can think about maybe moving on from Maxwell, maybe even getting compensation from him in you know, form of a draft pick, because he's playing so damn well that, you know, he's earned that maybe. I know the contract's rough, but I just think there's other areas of this team you can allocate that money to with the strong depth we have. I mean, the secondary was supposed to be an issue coming into the season, and right now it's a strength of the team, really, with four guys deep, and then even without Rashad Jones, our safety play has been, you know, it's been passable with, you know, Abdul Qaddous, and then Rambo and Thomas have been up and down, but just a strong secondary performance this year, and I've been really excited about that.
Yeah, like you said about, you know, maybe using that some of that money, not to get too far off the topic, but I saw that Barry Jackson Sports Buzz last week, and he talked about the team, you know, potential guys that they would want to re-sign, and I think the names he mentioned were Kenny Stills, Deion Sims, Andre Branch, possibly extending Rashad Jones, and then he also mentioned, you know, Jarvis Landry's, you know, we can't offer him an extension right now just based on the CBA, but he mentioned them, you know, trying to save up for that. So that may be something that bears watching down the stretch, especially if Maxwell, who hurt his ankle, if he can't go this weekend against Buffalo.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something we'll get into. That's probably a postseason podcast that we'll get to in terms of going over where the money should go and all the free agency and stuff. But we still got a season to play the rest of the way in 2016 and playoffs to look forward to. And we'll get to that later as well. But, you know, I'm pretty excited about where this team's heading right now, man. I think the offense under Matt Moore looked pretty good. I know it's the Jets defense, but, you know, there's something to be excited about. But before I get into that, Kevin, would you go ahead and fill me in on the roster notes? I saw we made a move very recently.
Yeah, so we had one roster note. Miami waived linebacker Zach Vigil the other day. He has since been claimed by the Washington Redskins, so best of luck to Zach with his new team. Miami signed linebacker Trevor Riley off of the Patriots practice squad. Riley, I believe, was a draft pick of the New York Jets 2 or 3 seasons ago. He's an outside linebacker, kind of a longer, leaner guy. He played defensive end some in college at Utah, 6'5", 245, pretty athletic. I think he ran a 4.66 in the 40. So I think he offers some versatility, maybe as a guy who can play, you know, some linebacker and some defensive end. And obviously with that athleticism, you can use it on special teams. But that is our one roster move so far this week.
Yeah, and this team has a lot of special teams aces in terms of, you know, making big plays. Walt Aikens obviously showing up on Saturday, and then Michael Thomas has kind of always been that guy for us. So hopefully he can contribute, and maybe he can do a little reverse Belichickian in terms of signing over a former Patriot or, you know, former AFC East foe to give him some intel for that game 2 weeks away.
That's a great point, too. Yeah.
And hopefully that game's irrelevant. I really hope that, you know, Christmas night I'm sitting there finishing up with the family and I'm watching the Broncos lose and watching the Dolphins clinch a playoff spot in the process. That's my hope. We will get to that later, like I said. But let's get to the offensive review here real quick. And who else are you going to start with besides Matt Moore? I mean, guy comes in, hasn't started a game since 2011, hasn't played in a full game since 2012. I mean, it wasn't a start, but he played at the Meadowlands in 2012 against the Jets when Tannehill went out after the second series of the game with a knee injury. But, you know, I thought there was some improvements over Ryan Tannehill's game that Matt Moore showed, and some downgrades, if you will. The improvements were the way he handled pressure and his ability to recognize coverage pre-snap. The Jets threw a lot of cover zero at the Dolphins and blitzed heavily. And he said, all right, well, if I can get, you know, 2.5 seconds, 3 seconds of pass protection, I got time to get this ball out there and air it out. And he did that all night. I mean, that floater to Kenny Stills was a good throw. The floater to Deion Sims that he crawled down to the 1 yard line on was a great throw. Got rid of the football early. His pass protection was pretty good all night. And I thought he played really well down around the goal line, which was something that surprised me because usually you need to be able to, you know, fit the ball in the tight windows down there in that area and have a little bit of athleticism on the bootlegs and the, and, you know, the moving around and stuff. And that's something that Tannehill specializes in and Matt Moore does not. I mean, and he did it, that, you know, that rollout pass, two rollout passes, touchdowns to both to Deion Sims, actually, where he showed an ability to get out of the pocket and put the ball where it needed to be. The one thing I do worry about is the arm talent. I mentioned it last week, when defenses kind of drop into coverage or maybe squeeze some of those tight windows with seven guys back in coverage and they rush four, those windows get really tight and you have to really kind of thread it in there. And this league, you know, windows close so fast that I worry that he has the arm to do that. He did throw a couple of, you know, quick digs and hitches to, I think it was Jarvis Landry and Devontae Parker on the first touchdown drive that looked pretty good. But I just worry about a faster, better, more talented and better coach defense that can maybe prevent some of that. So we will see where he goes from there, but he handled Adam Gase's system so well. And I mentioned the goal line plays, and I mentioned this last week with Adam Gase and the way he manufactures scoring plays with, you know, deception and picks and clear out routes. And it was just so beautifully done all night. And I love watching this team play in the red zone compared to years past with Bill Lazor, where it's like, what the hell are they doing? And now there's a point and there's a, you know, a rhyme and a reason to the routes and the concepts and the earlier plays setting up the later plays, and it's just awesome. I mean, I can't say enough about Adam Gase. I wrote down in my notes here that he is the pariah. He is the one that's going to take us to the promised land, because you look at any website today. Tuesday morning is a good time for power rankings and all that garbage they put out, but you can find some gems here and there, and Peter King wrote a hell of a piece about Adam Gase and what he's meant to this team and the culture change. We talk about it every week, Kevin, you and I do. But it's so cool to see Adam Gase's face on top of, like, the Yahoo power rankings and the top of Monday Morning Quarterback and all this stuff that I'm seeing today. So Adam Gase is the man. I hope he's here for 60 years until he's 90 years old in a wheelchair. Hope that all continues. But then again, I guess Todd Bowles won 10 games for the Jets last year. He could be fired by the end of the year. So maybe we're getting a little too far ahead of ourselves. I don't know, Kevin. Are you as excited about Adam Gase as I am?
I am. I think ever since we kind of won those two games against Pittsburgh and Buffalo to get us to 3-4 going into that bye week, I think we kind of, even on the podcast we did over the bye week, we kind of had that sense of excitement. And you can just tell Gase is pretty much a no-nonsense, no-bullshit guy. You know, obviously the Ajayi story, which is still getting play for some reason because the media hasn't caught up to it yet. But, I mean, you know, I thought it was interesting in that piece you were talking about with Peter King and Jenny Vrentis that on the Monday Morning QB site, you know, he cut Jameel Douglas, Dallas Thomas, and Billy Turner right after a game. He cut Leon Warren practice in the middle of practice after he found out about the drug arrest a few weeks ago. You know, there was an article that Adam Beasley came out with tonight basically saying that, you know, Miami's not even discussing contracts with anybody right now because he wants everyone focused on the Buffalo Bills. And I think that's great. I think it's culture changing. It's what, you know, we really haven't had that since Nick Saban. And I do wonder what would have ever happened if Saban had gotten Drew Brees. But, you know, that's for another episode. But, I mean, we really haven't had a coach like that since Saban. And Gase is a Saban protege, so I think it fits. And I thought it was really interesting on Saturday watching Matt Moore play. You know, I was kind of down in my prediction. I thought the Jets might be able to hang in there and have a chance at the end. And, you know, that four touchdown performance. And one of the things I think was kind of unique about it is I wonder if that performance and the way that Matt Moore ran the offense, it almost seemed like he kind of had a larger menu of plays to choose from. And I wonder if maybe Ryan Tannehill sees that, having a chance to observe. And maybe you kind of see that development, you know, when Tannehill comes back, whether it's this year or next year, and maybe we can do a little bit more offensively with Tannehill in charge. But, you know, just the play he's got out of him, out of Ajayi, out of the whole team, I love it. I love Gase.
I think there's certainly a point to that Ryan Tannehill thing because, you know, he's improved in this offense after being in it for, you know, 3 months now in terms of the season. And now he's going to have a whole season, off-season worth of tape to go through in this offense and a whole off-season worth of, you know, just kind of basking in the play calls and the schemes and everything that Adam Gase has. So I think you're certainly right there. I think he's going to be able to grow even more than he has. And he's hitting that kind of prime age for quarterbacks where they're, you know, when they get to 30 years old, the game just kind of slows down for them. So I think you're really on to something with that.
And I want to say too, before we move on to the next part of the offense, I do really agree with your red zone comment. You know, in the past when we had Philbin and Laser and Sherman, we got down there and, you know, you kind of prepared yourself for a field goal, almost like it was Tony Sperano all over again. And we've seen, you know, I don't know what the red zone efficiency stats are, but Miami's got to be, you know, in the top 10 at least in terms of touchdown efficiency since we've started, you know, since we went on the streak. You know, I don't know about the first five games, but every time we get down there now, I'm pretty confident we're going to score a touchdown, and it was more of the same on Saturday.
Yeah, and without the benefit of a running game too, because the running game's been really slowed down lately, and that kind of brings me into my next point about, you know, Jay Ajayi. I feel like he's continuing to miss holes and cut back lanes. I think he's pressing because he's a guy that we've seen on the mic'd up versions of highlight shows and within his comments on articles and all that good stuff that he's very adamant about, you know, his own production, helping the team on his own. And I kind of admire that because he wants it. And I feel like he's pressing a little bit and he's kind of just burying his head behind the line a couple times and not being patient enough to let holes develop and stuff like that. And, you know, the run blocking is certainly a contributor to that. With, I thought Craig Urbick played better at center than Anthony Steen did, certainly in pass protection. Jermon Bushrod, there was a play in the game, I think it was very early on, one of the first few drives, where he misses a reach block and the play gets blown up, and then he's holding his shoulder down like someone that just tore it, like broke a collarbone or something. So I think he's got a serious injury he's playing through. So props to him for that, but he's not really getting it done in the run game or in pass protection as much. I thought both tackles played well. Albert and James had good games. And then Laremy Tunsil, I thought, had a rough night. I think he's going to struggle against guys like Leonard Williams and Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson and those kind of guys. So offensive line. I'm sorry?
I said he's playing through a shoulder injury too.
Yeah, and that could be a big part of it too because his play has kind of tapered off there ever since that. So good point there. Tight ends, Deion Sims. He's becoming a real touchdown maker for us. I think this is 4 touchdowns in 3 games, if I'm not mistaken, for him.
Yep, second on the team in touchdowns behind Stills.
Behind Stills, I'm going to get to Stills here in a minute.
Touchdowns, that is, yeah.
Yeah. He's been a real big threat down there, and he's becoming even more and more involved in the passing game between the 20s as well. So excited about that. I was really surprised by Dominic Jones not being active for the game. I thought for sure that we were going to run tons of heavy sets with 13 personnel and come out with, you know, some of those play-action boots and getting Dominic Jones and Marquise Gray more involved. Marquise Gray did get 27 snaps, and Deion Sims had 45 out of the 48. But, you know, no Jones in the game. I thought that was pretty strange. But Gray played another great game. Kevin, how much did that Marquise Gray pass to the pylon or just short of the pylon remind you of the 2008 game when Pennington floated one to Anthony Pisano for a touchdown?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier. Honestly, I thought that was the best pass that Moore threw all night, just because he had a guy kind of in his face. And, you know, if you watch his footwork, it wasn't great. He kind of threw that offset and just dropped it right down there, and I think that was pretty much the same, you know, end zone.
It was.
Different stadium, but same kind of throw.
Perfectly located ball, too. I mean, it was right where you had to be, like you said. I thought the receivers played outstanding in this game. Kenny Stills, if you guys are familiar with the blog portion of WelcomeToPerfectVille.com, you know that my Wright Travis Wright blog is up there with I'm pretty much on fire with two or three articles a week. So the one I wrote just recently was about Kenny Stills and the way he runs clear out routes for these guys and sets plays up. And it's, you know, it's a testament to Kenny Stills and his commitment to actually being a team player and being selfless, but it's also more of a compliment to Adam Gase and his offense and kind of how they build things around, you know, decoys and different types of routes to get other things open. So thought he was great at that. Obviously the big play touchdown again, Kevin, he's the first Dolphin since Mark Duper to have 3 touchdowns of over 50 yards, passing touchdowns over 50 yards in the season. So there's that company that he's in. His 7 touchdowns all have been from outside of the red zone, 24 yards or further away. So he's a big play machine. The kid's 24 years old. Jarvis Landry is 24 years old. Devontae Parker's 23. Landry had another huge night. I mean, the big plays from Landry is what he's been missing. What I've been talking about him, you know, that being the difference between him being, you know, a good player and an elite player. And now he's got a 70-yard catch and a 66-yard touchdown in back-to-back weeks. Granted, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he made a play when we needed it. That slant for the touchdown pretty much put the game away and turned us into full-on celebration mode. Devontae Parker wasn't his best night, but you know, he had a couple of catches and looked good at doing those, but just not much involved in the game plan. So,
yeah. I think with Parker, though, too, it's important to mention that I can't remember who was covering him on the Moore interception, but Parker absolutely roasted whoever that was. And I think if Tannehill's throwing that ball, it's at least a long completion, if not a touchdown.
That's a really good point, because that ball really fluttered on Matt Moore. And that kind of, that's where the arm talent kind of comes into play. But, you know, I guess you kind of take the good with the bad there on that play. So that's a good point. Parker got underthrown badly on that play. Running backs, I was going out on a limb with Kenyon Drake all night on Twitter and on the episode last week saying he would make some plays. He only got 5 snaps, so that didn't really happen. Damian Williams had 7 snaps, not much action for him. Ajayi had 41. The receivers, they came off the field in the fourth quarter a little bit. So Landry only was out there for 36 of the 48. Stills just 26 of the 48. Parker, 28 snaps. And then Leonte Carew got 9. And Jakeem Grant got 2. So all in all, the offense had a hell of a night. I mean, 34 points is always good. I guess, you know, 7 of those were from the special teams. But a good night for the offense, 4 touchdowns. They are now, these splits are so strange, Kevin. Listen to these numbers. Passing yards per game, 27th in the league, but they're 5th in yards per attempt. So not a volume offense by any means, but definitely efficient. Rushing stats have gone way down, as you can imagine. They are 16th in the league in yards per game and 14th in the league in yards per rush, which used to be like top 5 for several weeks in a row. So that's gone way down. And then points per game is 22.5, right in the middle, at 17th in the league. So, you know, an offense that I think is still finding its way a little bit. And we saw that last week, obviously. But you take out those first 5 games, those numbers go way up and look way better. So the offense is coming along. I think that next year you're in for a hell of an offense and probably even a hell of a defense. So just really excited about 2017. And, you know, 2017 is not over yet, or 2016 is not over yet. And that actually brings us into our next segment, if you're ready to kick that off, Kevin.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
What are we talking about?
And we are talking playoffs here for the Dolphins. And, you know, on this video I have here, it's a remix of all the press conferences, obviously, the classic ones over the years. And the one that follows that Jim Mora one is Joe Namath talking to Susie Colbert about, you know, kissing her. And I showed it to my girlfriend the other night, and she thought it was pretty hilarious, where he's just drunk off of his ass and trying to make out with a sideline reporter. Just kind of coincides with the embarrassment that is the New York Jets and the Dolphins beating the crap out of them on Saturday, and then Joe Namath, their famed quarterback, making an ass out of himself on the sideline. So with that win, the Dolphins are now very much in hot pursuit of the playoff race. Sitting in the 6th seed now by virtue of the Broncos' loss on Sunday to the Patriots. Broncos continue to look just stuck in the mud on offense. They can't do a damn thing on offense, which is fun to see for us, because the worse they get with, you know, Kansas City coming up next, the better their odds of losing that game. So, Kevin, if we beat Buffalo on Sunday and the Dolphins play on Saturday, Christmas Eve, and the Broncos lose on Sunday night, on Christmas night, to the Chiefs, your Dolphins are heading back to the playoffs for the first time since 2008 and the second time since 2001. So a lot of good stuff to look to there. Kevin, what else we got for the playoffs? I mean, who else should we keep an eye on besides the Broncos?
Yeah, so I think in terms of if the unfortunate happens and we do lose on Saturday, we need to root for Pittsburgh to take out the Ravens. Pittsburgh wins the AFC North title with a division win there, so they'll be pretty motivated, and it's at home. And then whoever plays Tennessee, I do not have a schedule in front of me right now, but Tennessee does have a tiebreaker over us, so we do need to hope that they lose. I am pulling up their schedule right now. And then they play Jacksonville, so that's probably not going to be in the cards. But if they do win out, they win that division, so there's always that chance as well. And then the last two official pieces of business, Miami can also clinch with a tie this weekend if a lot of different things happen. So I'll give you those two official scenarios. It can be Miami tying the Buffalo Bills, coupled with a Baltimore loss, a Denver loss, and a Houston loss, or a Miami tie coupled with a Baltimore loss, a Denver loss, and a Tennessee loss as well. So we got 3 chances to clinch on Saturday. Obviously, the one that you mentioned is the easiest road to go. And then the other scenario, we win out and win both of the last 2, we're in no matter what. So lot of things playing in the Dolphins' favor there.
Yeah, and the one thing that I thought went against us on Sunday, because, I mean, you mentioned the Titans, and either the Titans or Texans is going to win the AFC South. You know, you have to send one from each division, so they're going to win the AFC South. So at six losses, the Dolphins don't have to be concerned about either team from the South or the North, thankfully. But with seven losses, then it all comes back into play. But I think the thing that went against us the most was that Raiders result when the Chargers had them. I think the Chargers had them down by three in the fourth quarter. If the Raiders would have lost that game, the Patriots could have won on Sunday against the Jets coming up, and that would have clinched the one seed for them, meaning we're probably not going to get Tom Brady for more than a series or two in week 17. So probably going to see Tom Brady at full strength with the Patriots at full strength, trying to get that one seed, because they know damn too well what happened last year in week 17 when the Dolphins took away the one seed by beating them. So important game there. But like you said, take care of business in Buffalo, rest up some guys and get healthy and get back to it, because everything's right in front of you right now. And you know, we mentioned a little bit earlier about Adam Gase and the quarterback, and I just get the feeling that Adam Gase is becoming one of those coaches that can win with pretty much anyone at quarterback. And I mean, not anyone, but, you know, he doesn't really need a star quarterback to carry him. So I feel pretty confident going into that game. And that kind of brings us into the next segment here, talking about the Buffalo Bills,
real,
Kevin.
Real quick, as it relates to the Raiders, we should also be Indianapolis Colts fans this weekend, because if New England wins against the Jets, which, let's face it, they're going to, it's just going to be by a matter of how much, and the Colts beat the Raiders, New England locks up that number one seed no matter what. So there's still a possibility that week 17 is completely irrelevant for them.
Yeah, that's true. I felt much more confident about the Chargers hanging on to that victory than I do the Colts taking the Raiders to the shed. But you're definitely right, that is the case. So we are Colts fans, and we are Chiefs fans this week. Well, Chiefs fans first, and if that doesn't happen, then Colts fans. So
yeah,
there's your teams to root for this week.
Yep. So next segment was Tannehill, right?
Yes, we should get to that before the Bills preview. Thank you for mentioning that. I'm about halfway through my cider here. I think it's already hitting me. That's a joke. I'm not that big of a lightweight. But yeah, let's get to Tannehill. Kevin and I talked a little bit as I was heading home from work. I was texting about someone on Twitter. I don't know who posted it, but I saw a retweet on Twitter of Ryan Tannehill at the Miami airport getting ready to board a plane to Pensacola, which I guess is just an earshot away from some hick town in Alabama where James Andrews lives, the famous orthopedic surgeon that does all the ACL injuries and all those big-time surgeries for big-time athletes. So I text Kevin, and I was like, this can't be good. You know, I'm sure he's going over there to get surgery. And Kevin was saying, well, I don't know yet. Let's see. But Kevin, what are your thoughts moving forward with Ryan Tannehill and kind of what we were led to believe is with him having a chance to come back and not having to go through surgery and all the rehab and stuff?
Well, I think at this point, my biggest hope would be that we're able to beat Buffalo on Saturday. And then, you know, obviously it sounds like I would hope Kansas City wins. That way you make week 17 irrelevant and you don't have to worry about, you know, trying to force him back early or, you know, relying on Matt Moore to win a must win and in situation. I feel like he probably went out there for a second opinion, you know, on it, or maybe a third opinion, whatever it is. But basically, from everything I've read and heard, it sounds like it shouldn't require surgery unless he fully tore it, which doesn't seem to be the case. But, you know, maybe that's why he went out there to evaluate it. My take on it would be is at this point, we might as well rest him. And if he's able to come back in the playoffs, you know, I would say as long as everyone, you know, Tannehill, the trainers, Gase, the coaches are all comfortable with it, I would play him. If not, then don't push it. You know, I'd rather have him and a loaded up team for next year. So I'll stick in the wait and see mode until we know something more. But my thought is if he was that bad, they would just put him on IR and be done with it.
That's a great point. I think that definitely, you know, lends some credibility to it. But I guess the better Dolphins fan in me thinks that I expect the worst and the bad news to come down. And we talked about this earlier with Mike Pouncey and how they shut Mike Pouncey down and said, we're not going to risk this guy getting, you know, further injured. And I kind of mentioned that to you about how, you know, they're not going to risk these guys' futures for the now. And then you kind of told me a good point, too, that I thought was that, you know, Mike Pouncey's got this kind of nagging injury that's been re-aggravated over and over again. So Ryan Tannehill never had an injury to deal with in the first place. So maybe that bodes well. We will see. I mean, I guess there's not really much more to talk about it than other than just kind of guessing at this point. So the news is that he is going to see James Andrews. We just got to hope that's for a opinion, maybe a clean out, something very minor, not just the full on surgery. So that's where we are with the starting quarterback. But for now, we have Matt Moore, the backup quarterback, in the game for the Buffalo Bills on Saturday at 10 a.m.
That's even if he went out there to see Dr. Andrews. You know, Tannehill's a pretty big fisherman, so maybe he was just enjoying a day off. Who knows?
I love the optimism you're showing me right now. I just hope, I wish I could kind of buy into it too. But no, that's a good point. Maybe it's something else entirely different, so who knows? But yeah, so Saturday, you know, Christmas Eve, for me it'll be 10 o'clock in the morning. For you guys on the East Coast, it'll be 1 o'clock in the afternoon playing the Buffalo Bills. With a chance to pretty much wrap up playoffs, I think. So, Kevin, why don't you tell us about that Bills defense and how we can attack it?
Yeah, so the Bills defense, we know it well. It's a 3-4 defense. It's Rex Ryan. There's going to be a lot of complex formations, a lot of complex looks and coverages and blitzes. One thing I went back and looked at is I was clicking through some of their volume stat rankings, and they are now ranked 27th in the NFL against the run, which really surprised me because usually Rex Ryan's teams are – you know, top three, top five. I think Buffalo was like 7 or 8 when we played them, you know, the first time around, and then Jay Ajayi happened and, you know, blew them out of the water. But if you look at their last 3 weeks, they gave up 107 yards rushing to Cleveland. 48 of that was on Robert Griffin III. I didn't watch the game, so I don't know if it was scramble yardage or design, but they gave up 240 to the week before to Pittsburgh, including 236 to Le'Veon Bell. And the week before that, they gave up 135 to Latavius Murray and Jalen Richard from Oakland. So that's 3 straight games in a row where the run defense has declined. So hopefully this will be a good week to get Jay Ajayi back on track. I thought that Juwan James kind of had a down game in terms of run blocking. I thought Tunsil had a down game in terms of run blocking. And Bushrod's been a liability for a while now. So, you know, maybe we'll see that turnaround. The big difference is this time around they will have Marcell Dareus back. We did not see him when we played them the first time. It's still that 3-4 base. Lorenzo Alexander is the main player to watch. He is tied for 3rd in the NFL with Cliff Averill with 11.5 sacks, but he has been cooling off. He had 1.5 against the Browns this past week, but prior to that he did not register a sack in 4 straight games. He had 1 in the first meeting before against Miami. That said, though, they are 3rd in the league with 38 sacks, so they can still get after you. They forced 17 turnovers, including 11 interceptions. Their pass defense is pretty good. They're giving up around 225 yards a game for 8th in the league. They held Tannehill in check pretty well in the first meeting. He was 15 of 25 for 204 yards and a touchdown, and a lot of that came on that big Kenny Stills play late in the game. But I think part of that was because Ajayi was doing so well. He ran for 214 yards. To me, this is going to be a game where, you know, Rex Ryan's kind of coaching for his job, and I think we'll either see him go one or two ways. And Travis, I want your take on this after I go through him. But I think, you know, Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan, you know, they're either going to, one, stay true to themselves, and they're going to try and do what Todd Bowles did. They're going to throw formations and pressure packages and blitzes at Matt Moore and basically try and confuse him and batter him to death. You know, I once saw a PDF of Rex Ryan's defense back when he was with the Ravens, and, you know, just the formations he has are enough to make your head spin. The other method, I think, and if Rex Ryan is smart, I think he would be, you know, trying this, is to, you know, rush 3 or 4 guys, no more than 5, sit back in a two-man shell and play coverage and force Matt Moore to throw it, you know, into tight windows, force him to make, you know, tougher throws and kind of just sit back and make him dink and dunk you down the field the way you would Tom Brady. I think it's going to go one of those two ways, and they'll probably try and sell out to stop Ajayi. So, you know, Travis, you know, being the offensive guy, if you were Matt Moore, which one would you rather see? Would you rather see the pressure and blitz heavy look, or them sit back in coverage?
I think I'd rather see the sitting back in coverage, because I think it makes you a little more vulnerable to the run, at least in the sense of, you know, having particular gaps covered up from the pre-snap reads and everything. So I'd rather have them play a more soft and a non-aggressive style of game, because I think that that benefits the Dolphins and what's probably going to be a low scoring, tight affair. I mean, we didn't expect to blow out the Jets, you know, and that happened. But I don't expect the Dolphins to blow the Bills out either. So I think that if we can play more close to the vest and try to get the run game going again, that benefits us more than anything else, rather than taking shots in what's going to be probably a windy and cold and wet, rainy day in Buffalo. So I hear what you're saying about Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan, but they are dangerous guys when it comes to, you know, not really giving a shit anymore. I mean, playing or coaching for their jobs and probably getting out of Buffalo and trying to get back into shape. I heard a story that they both have, well, at least Rex Ryan's getting back all that weight because he's eating at all the crappy restaurants in Buffalo because there's nothing else to do for him there. So he and Rob are going to town some wings out in Buffalo, and hopefully that's their last week they get to do that if the Dolphins take him down. So, I think that just I don't trust Matt Moore throwing into tight windows at all, man. But I also don't know that I trust him against an aggressive defense where they're actually getting pressure on him. So I guess I'm just worried about Matt Moore in general is my answer.
Okay, so hopefully Ajayi gets back on track.
Exactly. Exactly. So
that's all I've got for my defense. I think you said we're doing predictions after offense. So
yes, sir. No, you're good. I was just looking over the notes here. So, yeah, the Bills on offense, you mentioned Rex Ryan, and there seems to be like a disconnect between the two between Rex Ryan and Tyrod Taylor, because there were some rumors about him possibly benching Taylor in favor of either Cardale Jones or EJ Manuel, but that's not going to be the case. But Tyrod had some question marks about his intermediate passing game coming into the year, and I think it's showing up more and more. I mean, they are scoring some touchdowns, you know, a lot of touchdowns, and they're not turning the ball over. But if you find a way to clog his running lanes, his escape pockets, you know, out to either side, and his ability to extend those plays and you prevent the deep ball, he's not going to hurt you, because he really struggles with that intermediate accuracy. And I think that weather will play into the Dolphins' favor in that aspect as well. And another thing about Rex Ryan is players playing for their coach and not trying to get him fired. Richie Incognito came out and said that I'm playing for Rex Ryan the last couple of weeks of the season. And Incogs has been just fantastic. And as a Buffalo Bill, and frankly, I wish he was still our left guard here after Bullygate and all that crap that went down. But he can get out in space. He can outflank linebackers, and he can win in a phone booth. He's pretty much the main point of LeSean McCoy's success, coming with those runs behind number 68 there. And then LeSean McCoy, you know, I think you mentioned this on the forums earlier this week, he had 11 yards on 8 carries the last time he played against us, dealing with a hamstring issue the first game against Miami. But he's pretty much been just as good as Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson this year. He's just been fantastic, you know, making big plays. The Dolphins' tackling has to be better. That's kind of what another reason I like Xavier Howard on the outside rather than Byron Maxwell, because some of those plays where he bounces it outside, I think Howard's a more sure tackler. And then Jelani Jenkins needs either just to get his shit together or get off the field at all, or just in general, because, you know, McCoy can burn you in the passing game as well. I mentioned Taylor doesn't turn the ball over very much, but I do think our secondary can handle the Bills' receivers. They've been kind of a mixed mash all year. Sammy Watkins is battling an injury and all that good stuff. So I think Howard and Lippitt have established themselves as physical receivers, and they're really going to have to disrupt the timing there with the Bills, because it is a timing-based offense and kind of try to hit things in anticipation deep down the field. So hopefully their physical play can offset some of that. And then Cam Wake figures to have yet another huge day for the third straight week. Jordan Mills is the right tackle. And Mills, he struggles with a speed rush quite a bit. There was that famous gif from a couple of years back where Jordan Mills was the right tackle for the Bears, and Wake tossed him aside like an empty bag of Cheetos, or maybe I should say an empty bag of kale chips, because we know that Wake doesn't put anything besides the premium fuel into his body. So that offensive line, the right side's iffy. I guess John Miller's a pretty good right guard, but Jordan Mills at right tackle, taking over for Chantrell Henderson's not a great player, and struggles with that speed rush. So hopefully Cameron Wake can go off again. As for predictions for the game, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, and I think that I think it's going to be low scoring. I think that it's, you know, in a season that's been just so roller coaster-ish throughout every game, you know, where we're up and then we're down and we're back up again, I just get the feeling like something's going to happen where, you know, we're going to be driving up by, it's going to be 17-16, we're going to be driving into the Bills, you know, into the Bills red zone territory, and then Franks is going to miss a field goal, and the Bills are going to come back down and line up for like a game-winning 55-yarder, and Carpenter's going to kick it off like the upright or something, and the Dolphins are going to win in dramatic fashion with the former Dolphin finally not beating them. So my prediction is something weird at the end of the game, 17-16, Miami wins and goes to the playoffs this week.
Yeah, likewise, I think it'll be a close game. Miami's games have been kind of in the 20s all year. I too predicted a close game. I'm going Dolphins 24-22. I think something crazy will happen. And then I do have a bit of Dolphins breaking news. You know, we saw Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake basically nearly end Bryce Petty on Saturday night. And for that effort, both of those guys just were named to the Pro Bowl tonight. So.
Oh, really? That's awesome. I did not see that anywhere. That's fucking cool to hear. I'm glad to hear it. Good for those guys. Did we have anybody else on there that went? Or
those are the only two I've seen so far.
Okay, maybe we'll find out more for you guys. But before we do that, let's get to the next thing, Kevin, and talk about some draft prospects here. Who do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, so I thought it was kind of odd when I saw your notes. We totally didn't even talk about it, and I picked an offensive guy tonight, and you've got a defensive guy.
Yeah.
So I actually had, you know, kind of thought about what would happen if Miami got rid of Laremy, or it's not Laremy Tunsil, if they got rid of Brandon Albert and moved Laremy Tunsil to left tackle. You know, it would kind of leave a hole at left guard. And I started looking at a couple of them, and one guy really caught my eye was Dorian Johnson out of Pitt. I stumbled across his game from 2015 against Georgia Tech, where he lined up against Adam Gotsi, who was a second-round pick of the Denver Broncos this past year. And it was an interesting matchup because Gotsi was, you know, big, tough, strong dude. Dorian Johnson's pretty light as a guard goes. He's 6'5", 300 pounds, almost looks like a left tackle. He's definitely got the body to add, you know, 10 or 15 pounds on there. You know, he's got pretty good athleticism, good footwork. He's always aware. He looks to find a lot of work when he gets to the second level in the run game. He's always looking to step over and help out the center or the tackle and pass pro. The few times that he did go up against Gotsis directly in the game one-on-one, there were a lot of stalemates. And, you know, to me, I kind of count that as a victory against a guy like that who was playing so well that year for Georgia Tech. Watched a couple of his games from this year. He can pull pretty well when you ask him to. To me, he seems like a classic plug-and-play guy. You know, I don't know if he'll ever be an all-pro guy. I don't know if he'll be like Laremy Tunsil, who I think I read somewhere on Twitter has not allowed a single sack this year. But to me, he seems like a good, you know, second-round pick at left guard. And, you know, he seems to have that blend of power and athleticism that Adam Gase would probably like. So he's my guy for this week.
I like that pick, and I like where your head's at, because I think that we're really getting down to where, you know, the holes in this roster and the needs are becoming less and less each and every week. And I think that linebackers, offensive linemen, and maybe another pass rusher and tight end maybe is where the team really needs to focus its efforts. So
offensive needs, but I think the ones we have are pretty well, you know, apparent at this point in
time. Yeah, definitely. And you hit on that there. And Kevin and I have been pretty much in the same ballpark in terms of picking similar position players throughout this entire podcast's existence and going over some of these players that play in the trenches. So for me, it was a defensive player. It's another Alabama guy. Big surprise. I know I love those guys from that team. But Ryan Anderson is a guy that I think you can play at strong side linebacker and just put him in there day one, and he can be awesome for you. Kind of take over for Koa Misi and be a better version of what he was. I had a chance to watch three of Ryan Anderson's games for Alabama, one against Texas A&M, one against LSU, and one against Auburn. And each of those teams kind of offered something different in terms of their scheme and their play style. And, you know, Trevor Knight and that Aggie offense is kind of a tempo and high-powered offense. And they can run some stuff with Trevor Knight and his athleticism and get him outside the pocket and get him on some runs and some scrambles and some design runs. And Anderson's speed is just so good to the edges that he pretty much outflanked him every time. And Knight had nowhere to go most of the game. And then against Leonard Fournette, he was, you know, his good gap integrity, good job setting the edge, and kind of has those long arms he can lock on to the DNs and or to the tight ends, I should say, and clog up those holes. And then against Auburn and their power running game, and he was a force in that game and didn't really give them much room to work with either. So I think that Ryan Anderson is a good plug and play, strong side linebacker from day one for us. Might even go into the first round, so it might have to be the first round pick there, possibly second round, I guess. We'll see what happens. I do think he'll blow up the combine because of those measurables and because of how just physically stout and addicted to the weight room he appears to be. So my guy is Ryan Anderson for the draft prospect. That brings us right near the end of the show here, Kevin, with 53 minutes in. This is going to be our shortest one yet. We kind of talked about how we didn't want to go too far on tonight's episode, and here we are right next to an hour. So getting close to an hour for you guys here on the week of Christmas review and the Bills preview and the Jets review. But be sure to please check out our brother podcast, the main guys over at Welcome to Perfectville, the Perfectville podcast with Sam Marcoux and Chris Colon. They just dropped a new episode on Tuesday, and they should have one out for you guys on Thursday or Friday as well. So please keep an eye out for that. I am going to be getting out of here right now because I'm doing another podcast tonight, Kevin, for the Rock Pile Report, which is a Buffalo Bills podcast. They asked me to come on, must have found me on Twitter or something. So your boy's getting quite popular. Not really, but I did get asked to do that. So I'm going to be doing that here pretty shortly. Also check out the AFC East Bros. It's a good podcast with some good Dolphins, Patriots, Bills, and Jets coverage. And then also check out the Welcome to Perfectville website with the Wright Travis Wright blog portion written by me, as well as this podcast, the Finalysis podcast, and the Welcome to Perfectville podcast. If you haven't done so before, please go on to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast, the Finalysis podcast. Rate us, give us a 5-star rating, give us a nice little review. Tell us how much you like us or love us. Just give us 5 stars and we'll be good with whatever you say. Just kind of helps us get our name out there and gets us out to more Dolphins fans. So, Kevin, unless you got anything else you want to add, I'm ready to wrap it up, buddy.
Yeah, so 2 last notes. As promised, my article about the Y9 defense is ready to go. I turned it in last week, just waiting on Sam to post it. I know he was out of town, but that'll be up there soon. To confirm, Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh are in the Pro Bowl. As of right now, they're the only Dolphins who made it. So I don't know about Landry, Ajayi, and I would even argue for Tunsil. But so far, just Wake and Suh. And I guess my last word tonight is let's beat the Bills on Saturday. Hopefully everyone has a Merry Christmas on Sunday night with a Dolphins win and a Chiefs win.
Very well said, Kevin. Next time we talk to you guys, we could be doing it from a place inside the playoffs locked up. So let's go Dolphins, beat the Bills, and we will see you guys next time. Fins up.
Fins up.
Thanks for listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to WelcomeToPerfectField.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.